pretty good stuff. This morning, I'm going to tell a story. Sometimes in our Bible classes, we've talked about putting yourself in the shoes of people in the stories that you read in the Bible. Right? Not characters, but people. We've talked about that. And this morning we're going to do something similar to that. Except let's say instead of standing in their shoes, we're going to try to look through their eyes. Kind of the same idea. We're going to tell a story from the Gospel of John, as well as the other Gospels, about a man named Barabbas. Now, sometimes when you tell these types of stories, especially when there's limited information, we make some inferences from text, we make some assumptions, we speculate, and we build the story so we can tell more of a narrative. A lot of times when you see maybe Bible movies or miniseries, there's a lot of that in there, stuff that kind of built on top of it. I don't know if you remember this. When I was thinking about this idea, there was one in particular that came to mind. In 1999, there was a TV miniseries called Noah's Ark. I don't know if anybody remembers this. It was on NBC. They had a bit of a run on successful miniseries. And so they took on Noah's Ark. And I remember when I watched this, and before it starts, they put up this statement. For dramatic effect, we have taken poetic license with some of the events of the mighty epic of Noah and the Flood. Which should be a tip-off right at the beginning if they have to put the statement there that we've added a lot. For example, there's three people on the movie poster there. You've got John Voight playing Noah. You've got Mary Steenburgen playing Noah's wife. And F. Mary Abraham playing Lot. Now, you might be trying to remember where exactly Lot fits in to the Noah story. The truth is, he doesn't. Except in this two-part miniseries, which begins with Noah, a citizen of Sodom, and his best friend, Lot. And Noah, not Abraham, is the one looking for 10 righteous people. And it was kind of a mess of a movie. And this statement of poetic license, I felt they needed to start putting things up during this. This is one of those times that we've taken a lot of license. It was a little funny later when Noah and family are on the boat and Noah has to stop his wife from throwing cockroaches and mosquitoes overboard because she doesn't like them. And Lot and his pirate gang trying to take over the boat with... that's one part amusing about this. As they're doing that, he's wearing his wife's salt finger as a necklace. Poetic license doesn't quite begin to cover this movie. Maybe it's not always to this extent, but a lot of times when we tell these types of stories, we add in elements that we can either infer or that make sense. We do this in our kids' classes and from the pulpit frequently. For instance, when we're telling the Noah's Ark story, go ahead and find in the Bible the reference to people mocking Noah for building the ark. You'll spend a while. It's not there. It makes sense why we would teach that, and it makes for a nice fuller story. But there are times that we add things in. And I think it will be helpful sometimes to note, this is the nonfiction, this is the stuff we've made up, this is why we've done it. So, for today, a story I'm admitting is not fully found in the Bible, the story of the crucifixion through the eyes of Barabbas. I'm going to try to go for full transparency in this story. So, let's start off. This part of the story is non-fiction. I checked all these categories with the boys, and they think I've got these definitions right. So, non-fiction. This happened. This is true. I actually probably don't have to say as much as I thought I might, because Rick did a fantastic job telling a lot of this story just a few minutes ago. I should just bring him up and tell it again. So this story that really happened comes after Jesus in the garden, praying, speaking to the Father. And it comes after the arrest, betrayed by Judas, taken in front of various officials to try to determine what should be done. And when Jesus stands before Pilate, all four Gospels reference a tradition that at the time of the Passover, a prisoner is released. In some of them, Pilate offers up, do you want Jesus or do you want Barabbas? Some others, they don't mention that offer. They just have the crowd saying, we want Barabbas. Give us Barabbas. And this man named Barabbas is released while Jesus continues through this process that leads to his death by crucifixion. Now, there is not much that we can put in the non-fiction section of this story about Barabbas. So we're not given much. Matthew calls him a notorious prisoner. Mark said that he was in prison with the insurrectionists who had committed murder in the uprising. Doesn't tell us when and where and the scope of this uprising, but it says Barabbas was one of them. Luke tells us that he had been thrown in prison for an insurrection in the city and for murder. John simply says he's a robber. So we don't know a lot. There's not much we could put in this nonfiction, except we can say for certain that Barabbas was someone who belonged in jail. He was someone who deserved the sentence that he received. And he was someone who did not receive he did not receive the punishment from the sentence. He was released. And Jesus, who did not deserve it, was crucified. This part of the story is speculation. Some things that we think we might know about Barabbas, some clues that we can see. We know he was in prison as a part of this uprising, and that he was in prison for murder. One thing that we see is in John, when it calls him a robber, says this was a word that was that Josephus, the historian, always used to describe revolutionaries. These people who wanted to overthrow the Romans. Some groups of these would be known as the Zealots. There was at least one of those among the 12. This word, robber, does show up in the Passion narrative. The men on either side of Jesus were described with the same word, robbers, thieves. So some have speculated that perhaps the two with Jesus were arrested along with Barabbas and may have been his compatriots in that way. Again, speculation. Another thought about using this word. A lot of times when Josephus would use it to describe these revolutionary robbers, thieves, he would often talk about a group called the Sicarii. It's a group that was seen combining insurrection and murder. The name Sicarii means essentially the dagger men. They were known for as being a militant Jewish movement looking to overthrow the Roman authorities. And the Sicarii carried these small daggers that they'd hide in their cloaks. And at public gatherings, they pulled out these daggers to attack the Romans within the crowd. And they would blend into the crowds to escape. So someone said, maybe it's talking about somebody committing murder in the middle of a big crowd, an insurrection. Maybe Barabbas is one of these dagger men. And he was sneaking into a crowd and get somebody that he felt really deserved it. Again, this is speculation. So we don't know if these ideas are true, but it might give us a fuller picture of what might be going on with Barabbas. So let's take that to the next step in the story. This is historical fiction. I will freely admit that this is a made-up story. Historical fiction means you take a figure from history and build a story around them. This is kind of like the opposite of the opening statement from Dragnet, right? Where it says, this story is real, only the names have been changed to protect the innocent. Well, in this case, the story is made up, only the names are real. And we're talking about the guilty. So it's kind of turned on its head. So, unlike the makers of Noah, I'm going to say this is a fictional account, but it takes what we know, and it takes some of those speculative aspects, and maybe can help us understand this scene through the eyes of Barabbas. And since we're using our nice English terms, descriptive terms, the boys thought it would be good to point out. We're going to use second-person narration here. Right? First person is I. Third person is he, she, it. Second person is you. So you are going to look through the eyes of Barabbas. So you begin in prison. That's where Barabbas was when we first hear of him. You're in prison for a crime you did commit. And you know that your end is coming soon. And you know what that end is. You're going to be on the cross. You've been tried. There was evidence. You are guilty. This is the time of the Passover. Big crowds in town. A lot of good Jews, as you yourself would describe yourself, and a lot of Romans, extra Romans around to make sure they can control these crowds. And you're thinking to yourself, this is one of those times that I would have loved to have been out there. I could really cause some trouble with these extra Romans around. But you can't, because of your crimes. And you hear a crowd yelling your name, "Give us Barabbas! Give us Barabbas!" And can't help but think, this is the time. The crowd has come, and this is the time that justice will be served. And you've reached your end. To your surprise, when the guard comes, and you're preparing yourself for that final march, he opens the cell and says, "You're free. Someone else has taken your place." Your first instinct is to get out of there as fast as you can before they change their mind, right? And as you're on your way out of town, whether to meet up with your family or meet up with other revolutionaries, you can't help but to think about what's going on behind you. You start to think about what the guard told you. You're free. Somebody took your place. Your curiosity overcomes you, and you turn around to go back. You have to see what's going on. Who is this person that's going to receive the sentence that I should have? And you make your way through the crowds, perhaps wishing you still had your knife. And you see that final march that you're not a part of, that you were prepared yourself so many times in jail. And you see, as the crowd has moved to the hill, you know, the place of the skull, you see two men that perhaps you recognize on the left and the right. And in the middle you see this Jesus. You've heard of him. You've heard the things that they say about him. In fact, maybe you wished that if he really was the things that he said, that he'd joined with you. If he really is if he's really able to do the things you've heard he can do, then maybe he really could have brought about the end of the Roman occupation. Maybe he really could have brought the end result that you were looking for in removing these Romans. Most of all, you're glad it's not you up there. And you want to see how this guy's going to react, because you've worked through in your head so many times. You knew what you were going to say, the things you were going to say to the crowd. This guy seems different. Instead of cursing his captors, you see him looking out for his mother and his followers. He's telling one of his followers to take care of his mother. And you're waiting for this guy to say the things that you want to say, to tell these Romans that they have no business even being here. Tell these Romans that they need to stay out of our business. And instead of us being the troublemakers, they are the ones that have caused the problem. And you're looking to see, when is he going to stand up for the Jews? He cries out to God. But it's different than what we're used to, what you expect to hear. He's crying out to God as though he's confused. He's saying the things that we know from that psalm. He's saying, God, why have you forsaken me? But something feels different when he's saying it. As you're watching this, as you're seeing the pain, as you're seeing the life draining from these three men, you get more and more emotional. And you're just waiting for something of this to make sense. As time draws on, you see him start to pull up to try to say something. He had just said that he was thirsty, and these godless Romans took that as another opportunity to mock him. They've already jammed thorns on his head, and now they're giving him vinegar instead of water. And at this point, you are wanting to stand up and say, that's enough of this. He didn't even deserve to be there. And you can't even let him die with dignity. And you see him start to pull up. And you're waiting to hear the words that are going to come out. Maybe he's finally going to tell these Romans to go to hell like they belong. Maybe he's been speaking to God. He has called himself the king. He has called himself the son of God. And maybe now he's finally going to give them what they deserve. And he pulls up. It's hard to speak. And you lean in and you hear, Father, forgive them. They don't even know what they're doing. They don't even know. They have no idea what they're doing. They don't know. Forgive them, Father. What do you think was going on in Barabbas' mind as he's trying to process what he's seeing? Trying to figure out what to make of all of this. The truth is, while we've had the nonfiction and the speculation and the historical fiction, the truth is this whole story is autobiographical. For me, for you. There's not a one of us that stood at the cross or watched the final march or who sat in a cell and was released because of Jesus. But each one of us stands in the place of Barabbas. We know very little about his story. But we stand in his place because we know that Barabbas was guilty and that Jesus took his place. Each one of us stands in that same place. We may not be dagger men and women. We may not be trying to lead a revolution. We may not share his exact place. But every one of us was fully deserving of what Jesus took from us. Jesus stood in the place of each and every one of us. We were told, you are free now. Somebody took your place. So this story, the nonfiction, the speculation, the historical fiction, all of it, whatever you want to say about Barabbas, we have to say it is our story. And this story is not done. There's been a lot of curiosity about what happened to Barabbas after. We don't even have speculative information about that. That doesn't fit at all. That's Noah in Sodom sort of stuff. We'd be completely making it up. We don't know if he became a Christian. We don't know if he ever really understood what happened that day. If we're making up a story, I like to think, this is complete fiction, I don't have a slide for it, complete fiction. I like to think Peter, having been forgiven by Jesus for his denials and newly dedicating himself to telling the story, tracked down Barabbas. I like to think, even though I have no reason to, that Peter said, found him and said, you're Barabbas, right? Jesus took your place. Is that who you are? He said, yeah, he took my place. And I picture Peter saying, he took mine too. I like to imagine Barabbas' life being changed. But we don't know. We do not know. But what we do know, since we stand in the same place as Barabbas, but we have had our place taken, we have an opportunity to tell the rest of our story. Do we take that gift for granted? Do we say, well, Jesus loved me? Yeah, remember from the song? Yeah. Do we say that the point of this story is this is just how much Jesus loved me? Or do we say, because of what Jesus did for me, I need to go make sure that I can tell others that they are in the same place? Sometimes when we evangelize, we like the idea of coming across like we've got it all together. We sometimes when we tell the gospel story, we like to speak for Jesus. Maybe we'd be better off speaking for Barabbas. This morning, this is your story. If you are among the saved, if you are among those who have accepted Jesus as Savior, as the one who took your place. And if you need to come and share your story and share how you want the rest of your story to be told, that you need the support of this congregation, let us know. If this morning you are not in the place of Barabbas, if this morning you have not yet been released from that prison cell and said, and told that you're free, somebody took your place, and you need that this morning, come, we'll baptize you today. It'll be great. It'll be life-changing. If there's anything you need this morning, please let us know as we stand and sing.
All things are ready. Come to the feast. Come, for the table now is spread. Ye famishing, ye